Imagine you're just driving down Interstate 80 in Pennsylvania, right near the Ohio border.
Right, just a normal road trip.
Exactly. You're just looking out the window at the scenery, and then suddenly, rising out of what looks like a totally normal, quiet residential neighborhood, there's just an absolute forest of steel.
Yeah, it is really quite the sight. I mean, we are talking about 14 massive towers just piercing the sky.
It's wild. And one of them is so staggeringly tall that it literally has FAA aviation lights blinking at the top to warn airplanes.
Yeah, if you didn't know any better, you'd probably assume you stumbled onto like a secret military communication space or maybe some major commercial broadcast facility.
Right. But welcome to today's deep dive. Today, we're taking all our research to uncover why one man turned a childhood fascination into a world-class, commercial-grade radio frequency laboratory.
And we are exploring the high-stakes, highly engineered world of amateur radio contesting.
Yes, contesting. And whether you're an engineer, a project manager, or just someone trying to perfect a weekend hobby, what happens on those 16 acres in Pennsylvania is a complete masterclass.
It really is. It teaches us so much about extreme engineering, team leadership, and honestly, the profound power of mentorship.
Because building a facility of this magnitude, it just doesn't happen overnight. To understand the staggering scale of the K3LR superstation today, we have to look at the spark that started it all.
Yeah, and the professional background that made this crazy level of engineering possible. Our focus today is on Tim Duffy. He is widely known as one of the world's biggest champions for ham radio.
And his journey started way back in 1972. Tim Duffy was just 12 years old when he built a simple Quaker Oats crystal radio set.
Which is such a classic starting point.
It really is. And if you aren't familiar with a crystal set, it is basically the most basic kind of radio receiver imaginable. You don't even plug it into the wall.
Right. It literally uses the microscopic energy of the radio waves itself. The wave runs through a tiny crystal and a wire, and that's enough to vibrate a speaker.
It's just pure physics. And it absolutely hooked him. That very same year, he earned his first novice amateur radio license with the call sign WN3SZX.
WN3SZX. And, the velocity of his progression from that simple Quaker Oats box is what really stands out to me.
Oh, totally. Because by the time he was 16, he and a friend had already designed and built a three-tower station of their own.
Yeah, and there's this incredible anecdote from the sources about when he was just 15 years old. He was sitting in his high school algebra class, and he actually got pulled out of the classroom to go a broken FM exciter.
Wait, really? A 15-year-old got pulled out of high school math to go fix commercial broadcast equipment.
Yes, because he was already serving as the chief engineer of a local AM and FM broadcast station.
That is insane.
Right. And an FM exciter, it isn't just like a simple blown fuse. The exciter is basically the heartbeat of the radio
Oh,
station.
I see.
Yeah, it's this incredibly precise component that generates the base frequency. So, say, 98.5 megahertz. It generates that before the massive amplifiers boost it out to the whole city.
Wow. And his teacher just let him go.
The teacher let him go fix it, but only on the condition that he made up the math homework later.
That is amazing. And that early broadcast experience clearly set the trajectory for his entire life. I mean, he eventually moved into the telecommunications industry, ultimately serving as the chief technology officer for Cellular One and Dobson Communications.
Which is a huge job. In that role, he was responsible for the engineering and the reliability of wide area cellular networks across 17 different states.
So he was building infrastructure that thousands of people relied on every single day.
Exactly. And that corporate background is really the key to understanding K3LR. He brought this commercial grade mindset back into his amateur radio hobby.
Yeah, this wasn't just weekend tinkering in the garage anymore. When he bought that hilltop property in West Middlesex, Pennsylvania, back in 1986, a friend gave him a piece of advice. He basically told him to go big.
And he definitely took that to heart. He deliberately bypassed all the smaller, simpler categories of radio competition to design a station for the multi-multi category.
Which stands for multi-operator, multi-transmitter, meaning they are designing a facility where a whole team of operators can transmit on six different amateur high-frequency bands simultaneously.
Right, all from the exact same location, which requires an entirely different level of planning.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the difference between driving a fast car on a Sunday afternoon and managing an entire racing syndicate.
That's exactly the analogy that came to my mind. It is like feeling a Formula One team. I mean, it's not just about the driver behind the wheel. Right.
Right. There is so much more to it.
It's about the pit crew, the telemetry data, the supply chain logistics. It's the absolute obsessive engineering happening behind the scenes just to shave like milliseconds off a lap time.
The Formula One comparison is spot on, but you know, how does that F1 mindset actually manifest in the hardware?
That is the big question.
To understand that, we have to look at how Duffy protects his station from the invisible enemy of all radio receivers. And we are talking about electronic noise.
Oh man, this is where the story gets really wild. Because one of the most fascinating accounts of this comes from a guy named Terry Rossi. Terry has his own call sign, N2LQH.
Right, Terry. N2LQH.
Yeah, and he's an IT professional and this big backyard cook from South Jersey who got back into amateur radio in 2025. Terry ended up visiting K3LR, and he wrote about being just completely blown away by Duffy's strict zero-tolerance RF zone policy.
Because in the world of radio, the noise floor is everything. You can think of it like trying to listen to a whisper across a crowded room.
Okay, I like that visual.
If the room is dead silent, you can hear the whisper perfectly. But if everyone in the room is murmuring, the whisper gets totally buried.
Right, it just blends into the background.
Exactly. If your local environment is creating electromagnetic static, you will never hear those weak, distant signals from across the globe that you're trying to contact.
So inside this RF zone on the K3LR property, there is an absolute non-negotiable war on noise.
It is so extreme that the golden rule is zero wall warts.
And for those who don't know, wall warts are those little blocky power adapters you use to charge your cell phone or like plug in your internet router.
Yeah, those things. And none of them are allowed anywhere on the entire 16-acre property.
Wait, not anywhere?
Not anywhere. They aren't even allowed in the guest houses where the visiting operators sleep.
That sounds almost paranoid.
It might sound paranoid, but there is a very sound engineering reason for it. Those off-the-shelf adapters are known as switching power supplies.
Okay, and why are those bad?
Well, to step the 120 volts from your wall down to the 5 volts your phone needs, they rapidly chop the electricity up. They turn it on and off thousands of times a second.
Oh, wow.
And that high-speed chopping creates electromagnetic shrapnel. It emits this high-frequency chatter that travels back through the electrical wiring of the house, and it radiates right out into the antennas outside.
So how on earth do they power anything if they can't plug standard devices into the wall?
So everywhere you would normally find a plug-in adapter, K3LR uses a centralized linear 12-volt power supply. It is stepped down with extreme precision.
Okay.
And then the power cables are wrapped in toroid coils.
Toroid coils? What exactly are those?
A toroid coil is basically a donut-shaped piece of magnetic material. When you wrap a power wire around it, the magnetic field it creates physically acts as an electronic choke.
So it stops the noise.
Exactly. It literally strangles and traps those high-frequency spikes of noise before they can ever escape into the room.
Man, that level of dedication is what makes the main Radio Shack essentially bulletproof. I mean, inside they run 13 ICOM IC7851 transceivers.
Which are incredible machines.
They really are. They're these high-end, super-sensitive radios. And thanks to the clean environment and all that careful engineering, they've had zero failures to date.
Zero, which is unheard of.
And for power, they use custom single-band amplifiers powered by 8877 tubes. And they are running the absolute legal limit of 1,500 watts of power with a 100% duty cycle.
Yeah, and we should definitely clarify what a 100% duty cycle means.
Yeah.
Most consumer electronics and, you know, even most standard amateur radios, they need to take a breath.
Right, they overheat.
Exactly. If you transmit at full power, things get hot quickly and you have to let the components cool down. But a 100% duty cycle means these amplifiers are engineered with enough massive cooling and robust components that they can blast full power continuously.
Continuous.
Without ever needing a break, even throughout a grueling 48-hour endurance contest.
That is wild. To put 1,500 watts of RF energy in perspective for you, that is roughly the equivalent power of running a standard room space heater on full blast. But instead of generating heat, all of that energy is being converted entirely into invisible radio waves. Doing that on 6 bands simultaneously next to sensitive receivers sounds utterly impossible to me. Like, how do they not instantly deafen their own receivers?
Well, that is the central engineering challenge of a multi-multi station. It is a phenomenon known as receiver desensitization.
Desensitization.
Right. If you transmit a massive signal right next door to a receiver, the receiver's delicate front end gets completely overloaded by the local blast of energy and just goes deaf.
So how does Duffy solve that?
He solves it through a layered defense. The first layer is just physical separation.
Right, spreading things out across the 16 acres.
Exactly. You put as much physical distance between the transmitting antenna and the receiving antenna as your property line possibly allows.
Makes sense.
And then the second layer relies on highly selective roofing filters inside those ICOM radios.
Oh, I like to think of roofing filters like hyper-aggressive polarized sunglasses for your radio.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, like if you were staring at a blinding glare coming off the ocean, polarized lenses filter out the specific light waves causing the glare, letting you actually see the water.
Right.
So a roofing filter physically blocks out the massive radio signals that aren't on the exact frequency you were trying to listen to, preventing them from blinding the receiver's internal circuitry.
That is a brilliant way to picture it. But, you know, even with physical distance and roofing filters, when you are running 1,500 watts, you still need one final layer of protection, and that is custom electronic interlock systems.
Interlocks? How exactly do those work in practice?
Okay, so imagine two operators sitting near each other, and they're assigned to the same radio band. You have a run operator who is sitting on one frequency, just calling out loudly and racking up contacts as fast as possible.
Okay, the fast-paced guy.
Right. And next to him is the multiplier operator. His job is to quietly sweep up and down the rest of the band, searching for new, rare stations that will multiply their final score. Hardware interlock is a custom networking device that monitors both of their stations at the same time. It physically prevents both transmitters from firing at the exact same millisecond.
Oh, so they are never actually transmitting over each other.
Precisely. If the run operator hits his foot pedal to transmit, the multiplier operator's transmitter is instantly temporarily disabled at the hardware level.
Wow, that's fast.
Yeah, the human operators might not even notice the millisecond delay, but it requires incredible digital coordination and custom RF switching systems to ensure the equipment survives.
That is so cool. But, you know, isolating the shack from noise and protecting the radios is really only half the battle, because once you've created that perfect silent room, you still have to physically pull those faint signals out of the sky.
Which is not easy.
No. And that requires moving outside onto the 16-acre antenna farm.
And the sheer scale of the antenna farm is where the superstation title is truly earned. I mean, the property boasts 14 separate towers and over 50 distinct antenna systems.
Including that massive 275-foot tower for the 40-meter band. But height isn't the only way they dominate the airwaves, right?
Not at all. For the lower frequencies, like the 80-meter band, they utilize a phased four-square vertical array. And to make a vertical antenna work efficiently, you can't just stick a metal pole in the air.
Right, you need more than that.
You need a highly conductive ground plane beneath it. So to achieve that, they actually buried 95,000 feet of wire radials in the dirt.
Wait. 95,000 feet. If you do the math on that, that is roughly 18 miles of copper wire just buried in the lawn.
Yeah, it's wild because a vertical pipe is really only half an antenna. To effectively launch a radio wave over the horizon, the energy needs something to push off of.
Oh, I see.
So those 18 miles of buried copper act as a massive electromagnetic mirror. When the radio wave hits the highly conductive ground plane, it reflects the signal powerfully up into the sky. And from there, it can bounce off the atmosphere and travel to the other side of the planet.
That is genius.
Yeah.
And they also sank 13 8-foot solid copper ground rods straight into the earth beneath the main shack.
Right, because electricity is inherently lazy.
It really is. It always wants the easiest path to ground.
Mm.
So by sinking those rods, they create a perfect low-impedance electrical ground.
Exactly.
It ensures that any stray electricity or, like, lightning strikes or even electronic noise has a massive, frictionless highway straight into the dirt, steering it completely away from the delicate radios.
Spot on. And, you know, to prepare all this complex hardware for a 48-hour global contesting endurance run, Tim actually leads the team through a rigorous process called a 70-sweep proof of performance.
Okay, tell me about this sweep.
So they use these highly sensitive network analyzers to literally sweep the resonance of every single antenna just to ensure storms or wind haven't knocked them out of tune.
Sorry, too.
Yeah, and they verify the high-speed fiber optic network that links all the computers in the shack. And most importantly, they stress test the amplifiers. They take those 8877 tubes and they just blast them at full power into dummy loads.
Dummy loads. And for those not familiar, a dummy load is essentially a massive, heavy-duty heatsink Instead of connecting the amplifier to an antenna and broadcasting your test tones all over the world, you connect it to the dummy load.
Exactly.
And it safely absorbs the entire 1,500 watts of electrical energy and just turns it into pure heat. It lets them find out if a component is going to melt or fail under stress before the competition even begins.
Right. It's all about finding the weak links.
Okay, I have to offer some playful pushback here.
Let's hear it.
Looking at the sheer amount of work this takes, I mean, the 18 miles of buried wire, the toroid coils on every single power cord, the 70-point sweep tests, this sounds utterly exhausting.
Yeah.
Isn't amateur radio supposed to be a fun, relaxing weekend hobby? Why on earth treat it like a high-stakes military operation?
That is such a natural reaction. And, you know, if you are just looking to casually chat with friends on a Sunday, this would absolutely be total overkill.
Yeah, no kidding.
But for Tim Duffy and the K3LR team, the joy actually is the precision. The fun isn't just in talking on the radio. The fun is in executing a flawless, bulletproof engineering plan.
So the prep is part of the fun.
Exactly. The perfect performance guarantees that when a weak, incredibly rare signal from a place like Norfolk Island finally pops out of the static at 3 a.m. on the second night of a grueling contest, they won't lose the contact just because a 50-cent cable connector failed.
That makes perfect sense. You eliminate all the technical variables beforehand so that during the 48 hours of the contest, human skill can truly shine. You don't want your operators worrying about the hardware. You want them entirely focused on the strategy and the endurance.
Exactly. And speaking of the human element, with all this intense hyper-competitive infrastructure, it is very easy to make an assumption. You look at the towers and the millions of dollars of commercial-grade gear, and you might assume K3LR is this exclusive, closed-off billionaires club.
Right, like a country club with a keep-out-serious-professionals-only sign on the gate.
But the reality is the exact opposite. Tim Duffy is arguably one of the world's biggest champions for opening the doors of ham radio to absolutely everyone. He doesn't hoard this facility. He shares it.
He really does. He is incredibly dedicated to education and community building. I mean, he's a founder of Contest University, which is an organization that provides professional-level training to operators all over the world.
Yeah.
And he's also the chairman of the Worldwide Radio Operators Foundation. They support the hidden IT infrastructure and log-checking software that makes these massive global contests possible.
And he actively hands over the keys to his station. He regularly hosts all youth teams, like a group called Team Exuberance.
Oh, I read about them.
Yeah, they are made up entirely of operators under the age of 21, and they literally take over the multi-million dollar station during major global contests.
That is so cool. We also see accounts of young operators like Katie Campbell, KE8LQR. She gets to sit in the operator's chair and learn advanced skills like high-speed rate operating and reading solar propagation charts, and she's doing it on world-class gear that most people will never get to touch in their lifetimes.
It is a remarkable, tangible commitment to passing the torch to the next generation. And that open door philosophy brings us right back to Terry Rossi.
Oh, yes. The IT guy and backyard cook from South Jersey. N2LQH.
Yes. Terry's path to operating at K3LR is perhaps the most human story in all of this source material.
This is hands down my favorite part of the deep dive. So Terry is just a guy trying to get back into his hobby. He starts researching contest stations, and he naturally falls down a massive YouTube rabbit hole.
As one does.
Right. And he ends up watching a sprawling 1-in-68 slide presentation about the engineering of K3LR. He sits there and watches the whole thing. The towers, the 18 miles of wire, the radios, the strategy, all of it.
And then sometime later, Terry gets a routine, automated customer satisfaction email from DX Engineering.
And Tim Duffy happens to be the CEO of DX Engineering.
Exactly. Now, most people in Terry's position would just hit delete on that email or, you know, maybe click a quick star rating and just move on with their day.
But not Terry. He decides to write a passionate, long-form letter back, directly replying to the CEO.
It's amazing.
He tells Tim all about getting back into the hobby, upgrading his amateur license, and how absolutely blown away he was by that 168 slide video presentation. And he includes these incredibly specific, beautifully human details in his email.
Yeah, he mentioned an old Hot Tuna 8-track tape, right?
Yes. He mentions listening to a Hot Tuna 8-track during a high school carpool back in the day. And he even specifically praises K3LR's dedicated team cook, a guy named Sal, noting that an army marches on its stomach.
Which is so funny. And, you know, it wasn't a networking email. Terry wasn't asking for a job or a favor. It was just a genuine, authentic expression of shared passion for the radio art from one operator to another.
Exactly. And instead of getting a sterile corporate form letter back from some assistant, Tim Duffy personally replies. And not only does he reply, he actually invites Terry to travel to Pennsylvania and join this elite, highly competitive team for the 2026 ARLDX phone contest.
That is just incredible.
A backyard cook from South Jersey cold emailed a telecom CEO about a hot tuna 8-track and got invited straight into the Formula One paddock.
It perfectly highlights the duality of the station. I mean, the engineering is uncompromising and ruthless, but the culture is deeply human, humble, and just welcoming.
Totally.
And what's truly amazing is that this culture of sharing extends well beyond just the hobbyist community. Because of that impeccably clean RF zone we discussed earlier, that total fanatical lack of electrical noise, the station is actually utilized for serious scientific research.
Right, the citizen science aspect. K3LR partners with Hansi Sci, which is a collective that connects amateur radio operators with professional atmospheric researchers.
Yeah, because the noise floor at the K3LR property is so extraordinarily low, the Hamasai researchers determined it was one of the most perfect environments in the entire country to install a personal space weather station. So they set up a highly sensitive ground magnetometer and specialized software-defined radios on the property to collect continuous, highly precise data.
And they use it to study solar activity and how space weather impacts the Earth's ionosphere. And, you know, the reason ham radio operators care so much about the ionosphere is because it is basically their internet.
Right, exactly.
When the sun emits radiation in sunspots, it charges the Earth's upper atmosphere, basically turning it into a giant electrically charged mirror. Ham operators rely on that mirror to bounce their signals across oceans. So they are perfectly positioned to help scientists study how solar flares change our atmosphere in real time.
It really is a beautiful contradiction when you step back and look at it. You have this facility engineered to brutally dominate global radio competitions, pushing 1,500 watts of raw power on 6 bands simultaneously.
Yeah.
And yet simultaneously, it serves as a welcoming classroom for teenagers and a peaceful, silent observatory for scientists studying the sun.
It proves that high performance and high accessibility are not mutually exclusive. In fact, at K3LR, they feed off each other.
They absolutely do.
The competitive drive is what justifies the massive engineering effort. The engineering creates the perfectly clean, noise-free environment. And then that pristine environment is freely shared with the youth and the scientific community.
It is about applying a commercial-grade mindset not just to the hardware and the grounding rods, but to how you treat the people around you and the legacy you leave behind.
Exactly. So bringing this all back to you, the listener, what is the big takeaway here? You know, whether you are trying to optimize a business process, perfect your own weekend hobby, or just organize your life, Tim Duffy's K3LR Superstation offers a masterclass.
It really does.
It proves that combining uncompromising, zero-tolerance standards, like an absolute war on wall warts and RF noise with open-handed mentorship and community building, is the ultimate recipe for lasting success.
Yeah, when you combine passion with rigorous discipline, you don't just win contests, you advance the entire field.
And that leaves us with a final thought to mull over today. Tim Duffy built a global communication legacy. He built a 16-acre technological marvel that influences scientists and inspires teenagers alike.
Yeah.
And it all started with a simple Quaker Oats crystal set when he was just 12 years old. So look around your own life. What untapped potential is sitting in your own childhood fascinations right now, just waiting for a little commercial-grade dedication to turn it into something truly extraordinary.